So, welcome. Thank you for coming. This week we are continuing our discussion about Maaser. So, over the last few months, we've been talking about the different levels of giving. So we talked about the maximum, which is a fifth. We talked about the minimum, which is a third of a shekel, which is about $5 to $6 a year nowadays. And so what we're going to continue to discuss now is what the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch call the Midah Beinonis, sort of the middle of the road, the standard practice, to give a tenth. Last week, what we spoke about was kind of the pre-Matan Torah history of Maaser, of giving a tenth. And we noted that there are sources in Midrashim and Gemaras about how all of the Avos instituted various aspects of Maaser, giving a tenth of one thing, giving a tenth of another. And the question is, what exactly is the source for the practice of giving a tenth of your assets? Now, in the Torah talks about giving Maaser for certain things, giving a tenth of your animals, Maaser Behema. There's giving a tenth of your produce to a Levi, that's Maaser Rishon. Then there's giving a tenth to a poor person, that's called Maaser Ani. But those are really agriculture. The question is, this practice of giving a tenth of whatever profits you make, where does that come from? And if you look in the Gemara doesn't mention it, ever. The Gemara never talks about giving a tenth of your assets, just the tenths of agriculture or animals. The real first source that we have in halacha that we know about, and I say that we know about is because there are claims that there's an earlier one, is if you look in source number 1 and 2. This is a Gemara in Maseches Tanis. So the Gemara is not talking about giving a tenth of your assets. It's just talking about giving a tenth of whatever the Torah tells you to. Aser ta'aser, that's a pasuk in Parshas Re'eh. We lain it on Yontif. It means, literally, you shall surely give a tenth. But it's a double language, which the Gemara darshins, aser b'shvil shetis asher. Give a tenth so that you will become wealthy. In other words, giving maaser is a segula for getting rich. Tosfos, in source number 2, he quotes a medrash. He says, hachi isa b'sifrei. I found this in a sifrei. The sifrei is the medrash halacha, on the Svarim of of Bamidbar and Dvarim. Aser ta aser eis kol tivuas zarecha, hayotze hasade shana shana. That's the pasuk that the Torah says, you shall surely give a tenth of all of the produce that come from your field every year. So, ainli ela tivuas zarecha shechayev b'maaser. So if I just had that pasuk, that just tells me that I have to give a tenth of whatever I grow. Ribis uprakmatia v'cholshar rivachem minayin. How do I know that I have to give a tenth on profits from loans to non-Jews or business ventures or all other types of profits? Talmud Lomar eskol. The words eskol is a riboy. It adds this as well, that you have to give a tenth on all other business ventures as well. To have a matzi lemeimar estivu asecha. It could have just said estivu ascha, my kol. Why does the word kol come to add? L'rabos ribis pragmatia v'chol davar shemar v'yachbo. It comes to add all other types of profits.
That is a real stretch.
It is a bit of a stretch. The other problem is that if you look in the sifrei, it's not there. So the problem with which all subsequent mefarshim say is that it's not there. And so apparently, it's known that there were other versions of Midrashim, but we don't have it. So Tosfos apparently saw this, and we don't know where he's coming from. One very creative read, I forget which Achron suggests this, he says, no, there's no nekudos in Tosfos. What you're supposed to read it is not hachi isa b'sifrei. You're supposed to read it as hachi isa b'sifri. This is what I found in my book in the Gemara, which again is a bit of a stretch. But the So Tosfos though seemed to have this as a medrash. Then this next whole paragraph is a story that Tosfos also quotes from an Agada. He says, "V'hachana mi'ika behagada." I found this in a Medrash Agada. Now, Tosfos doesn't say which Medrash it is. And the other thing that you have to understand about Midrashim, especially Midrashe Agada, is that you know, when we talk about Medrash, we always think, oh, it's from the time of Chazal. It's from the times of the Gemara. And that is true for many Midrashim. Midrashei Halacha, the Mechilta, the Sifrei, the Sifra, all of those have been around since the times of the Gemara. And certain Medrash Agada, certain Homiletic Midrashim were also very early. Right. Medrash, though, literally just means drush. It means drushes. It means ideas. So anybody could write a medrash. In fact, if you look nowadays in certain more modern Sfarim stores or Israeli bookstores, they have from scholars medrash that they made up their own medrashim. And in fact, last year, if you remember from Rabbi Zirkin's Shabbos Haggadah drasha, so he showed the AI Haggadah. So as a Pesach present from the shul, he got me one too. And I was looking at it over Pesach. It's fascinating. But if you look in the introduction, the people there, the coders, gave the rules that they used to tell the computer. And Medrash, I think it misunderstood their instructions, not to say, look for a Medrash, but rather, make up something. And it does, because it quotes Midrashim, and I'm like, I don't remember this. And then I'm reading this at the Seder, and I'm like, this doesn't sound right. And I start looking online over Chol HaMoed, looking in various databases. It made it up. I don't think that it was a flaw, like in that law case where it made up a case. I think that it just literally understood Medrash in its, you know, old form, which is just make something up.
AI.
My memory's not good anymore. The Yalkut Shimoni.
Yes. So the Yalkut Shimoni has this version in some form, and the Yalkut Shimoni is a product of the Rishonim. It was written very late. I think the 1100s or 1200s.
That's right.
However, that's not to mean that they made it all up. Some of it was collected from earlier sources. I don't mean to besmirch any late Midrashim. What I'm saying is that even when Tosva says there's this Agadic Medrash, you can't just assume that, oh, it's a biblical drasha going back from the times of the Gemara. But regardless, it is a source that Tosfos quotes, it's based off of this pasuk, Hayotze Hasada Shana Shana, whatever comes out of the field each year, Klomar, Im Lo Ta'aser Sadcha Kahogen, if you don't take a tenth properly, lo yielecha ella hayotze min hasada. You'll only get what's supposed to come out of the field, meaning a tenth. What Hashem is basically saying is that if you don't give Meiser, you're going to have to rely on Meiser, you're going to be poor. And then it goes through a whole story, which I'm not going to read inside just because it's really long, but basically there was a guy who was very, very scrupulous to give Maser, and he told his kid, you know, when I die and you inherit my stuff, continue to give Meiser. The kid did the first year, then the second year he didn't do it, and then the field only produced a tenth. And then everybody's like, ah, oh, Baruch Hashem. And the son is like, what are you talking about? And they said, no, this proves this pasuk. And it proves your father was right. Yeah, exactly. So, like, I don't think the son was so happy, but that's what Tosfos, that's what Tosfos basically says. So then he started again, and again went back to normal.
He learned the lesson.
He learned his lesson. So the question is, okay, so Tosfos has this medrash, which we don't know where it's from. If you look in source number 3, this is probably the closest medrash, but there is a very significant difference, or potential difference. Aser ta aser, aser bishvil shetis asher, this is a medrash tanchuma. Aser kidei shelo tis chaser, so give meiser so you don't lose out. Again, that's sort of similar to that agadic medrash. Then it adds something. Remez lemefarshe yamim. This is a hint to those that sail on the sea. Now, who sailed on the sea? What type of professionals? Business people, right? You know, Zvulun is known as the ship people because they would sell stuff. They would go into business. Lahafrish echad min eser la'amale Torah. Again, you have the Yisachar Zvulun idea of separating a tenth for those that toil in Torah. So there's a couple of very significant differences between Tosfos's Medrash and this one. What they share in common is that they're saying that there's more to Maser than just agriculture. But that's where they diverge. There's two major differences to me. What are they? Or what's one at least?
Well, the play on words.
One is Lotus Chaser.
Right, so that one, that's similar, that difference of, you know, give so you will be wealthy is different than give so you won't lose out. That's a little bit more similar to the Agadic Medrash. Another difference is, who's it going to?
Yeah.
Who's the Meiser going to? This, the Tanchuma says it goes to the people that are learning Torah. Now, it could be that they don't have a lot of money. Like, when people ask me why I went into the rabbinate, I say because of the money. But, but...
And they look at you?
They do. There's a pause. It depends who I'm answering. Not every Talmid Chacham is necessarily poor. Not every Talmid Chacham is necessarily wealthy. It seems to be building off of the Yisachar Zvulun relationship, that we'll have this strategic partnership. I'll work, you learn, and we'll share both the profits of this world and next world. But it doesn't seem to be talking about giving tzedakah to poor people. Now, as we'll see, this is a very big discussion in Hilchos Maaser, which is, what can you use your Maaser money for? Do you have to give it to poor people? Can you do mitzvos with it? Or can you do other good things with it?
You're only talking about Maaser Ani here.
Well, no. Who says that this is Maaser Ani? You're right. Maaser Ani that the Torah talks about has to go to the poor people. But who says this is? I'm sorry?
Maaser Rishon goes to a Levi.
Right. Okay, well, I was going to get to that. We can get to it now. The question that we're going to be dealing with is, how similar is this halacha of maaser ksafim, of giving a tenth of your money, to the halacha of giving maaser to either a poor person or to a Levi? Mm-hmm. Because the more it has to do with that biblical mitzvah, ironically, the less it has to do with tzedakah. Why? Because tzedakah has to go specifically to somebody that has needs. Maaser Rishon doesn't. Maaser Rishon can go to a Levi, even if the Levi is wealthy. Maaser Sheni is eaten by you. So that's going to be one of those discussions.
Oh, that's the Levi, I forgot.
Right, exactly. So that's...
We have fives.
Next time.
So if you have 50, if you have $50 in your wallet, so you give him a five.
I know this guy for a long time.
Hold on, I may have
50. He can't sing? Okay.
Voice.
All right, you know, he can open a door. He can open a door. But he can open a door, at least. I've seen him hold the door. Oh, guard the door. Yeah. He could be a good doorman.
I find this whole thing all focused on planting. And even back then, there were people who were not farmers.
Yeah, so that's part of that question, which is Maaser Ksafim basically saying that, look, if you're not a farmer, then you're just going to get off the hook. That's not right. Or is it just something else? Is it just saying you should give a tenth of whatever you do? Is it to sort of compensate or to make sure that we don't lose out on a potential revenue stream? Or is it just a nice practice? So we'll see. That's a machlokas.
A farmer who gives Maaser Ani, he's yaitzer.
Well, maybe not. Meaning, if you think it's just a nice thing, then even if I have a side business, maybe I should be giving Maaser on that. If you say, though, that it's just because we don't want the business people to get off the hook, then maybe you're right. Then maybe if I give Maaser and my primary occupation is produce, if I have a side business venture, maybe I don't have to. So that's one difference. The difference between this medrash and Tosfos' medrash, first of all, is who it goes to. And the second is the nature of the drasha. Tosfos seems to say, look, this is a drasha. Typically, what are drashas? Biblical laws. What is the medrash Tanchuma's wording? Remez. It's a hint. So a hint, automatically, the connotation just knocks it down a few notches. That could just mean... we have another word for it in Aramaic called asmachta, which is that the sages had this idea and they knew people weren't going to listen to them so much. So they said, oh, this is really connected to a biblical verse. So yeah, if we just say we think it's a nice thing, we think it's important for people to give Maaser, they're not going to give. If I point to a drasha, if I make up a drasha, so then they'll be more motivated. So that already is another potential difference between this medrash and Tosfos's. According to Tosfos, maybe it's a halacha de oraisa that you have to give Maaser on your money. According to this Medrash Tanchuma, probably not. So what do the Rishonim, how do the Rishonim deal with this? So if you look in source number 4, this is the Tashbetz, or the Tashbetz Katan. The Tashbetz Katan was a Rishon, and he says, Bemedrish, it says in a Medrish, Yesh aser ta aser l'rabos maser k'safim. He seems to count as a biblical mitzvah to give maser on your money. Now, to my knowledge, that is the only Rishon that I actually have seen explicitly say this is a biblical mitzvah. Some people say, oh, Tosfos holds that way. But who says? Meaning, Tosfos just seems to be quoting a Medrash. It doesn't mean that he paskins that way. Furthermore, when Rav Schechter says this, I haven't really done a systematic search. But if you look in the Midrash Halacha, Rav Schechter says a lot of those drushas are asmachtas anyway. They're not real drushas. So it could be that even if it is in the book, we don't take it so seriously. So if you look in other Rishonim, it's as if this doesn't exist. In the back of every Masechta, there's a section, it's very small, or it depends how big the Masechta is, called Piskei HaTosfos. The Piskei HaTosfos was written by a later Baal HaTosfos, which basically collects all the Halacha L'maisa Psakim from Tosfos. This isn't there. If you look in the Rush, doesn't exist. If you look in other Baalei Tosfos, I haven't found it.
I want my money back.
You wouldn't find it either.
So, if you look in Tosfos, it doesn't seem to exist. The Chassam Sofer seems to make a proof. It's not in the source sheet. He seems to bring a proof from a Ma'aril. A Ma'aril was one of the, I would say, 13th century German halachist, a major link in the chain of German halacha. He says, the Ma'aril says that if you use money that's considered to be maaser for the upkeep of a shul, that's not right because it's called stealing because it belongs to the poor people. So the Chassam Sofer seems to argue that that's a proof that the Ma'aril holds that it's doraisa. I don't necessarily think so. I haven't admittedly gone through the whole tshuva, so maybe I'm missing something. But to me, it just seems like, yeah, if something, even if it's rabbinic, or if it's a custom, if we've decided it belongs to the poor people, you can't use it for other stuff. So this Tashbetz Katan is really the only explicit source that it is biblical. If you look in source number 5, this is the Bach. The question becomes, where does Maaser actually appear in the Shulchan Aruch? Right? I said it doesn't come up in the Gemara. Where does it come up in the Shulchan Aruch? Not in Hilchos Tzedaka. There's a reason why I didn't give you any photocopies of the Shulchan Aruch by Hilchos Tzedaka, is because it's not there. The real discussion about where Maaser comes from is actually in Simin Shin Lamed Aleph in Yoredeya, which talks about the mitzvos hatluyos ba'aretz. It talks about the mitzvos that occur in the land of Israel, like Truma and Maaser. So in the Shulchan Aruch itself, in the Tur itself, it's very, very short. The tour for Simon Shin Lamed Aleph basically says, none of this is really Nogeya Halacha L'maisa. None of this stuff applies anymore nowadays. So I'll just give you very, very brief stuff. And then the Beis Yosef and the Ramah, they say, well, hold on a second. Maybe this stuff is important. And maybe it might be relevant rabbinically or for other reasons. So it's much more expansive. But this is where one of the ramifications or one of the arguments to say that even if it's not biblically relevant nowadays, it does have important halachic ramifications is for maaser, for money. If maaser on money is biblically linked to agricultural maaser, so all the halachos that apply to agricultural maaser should also apply to biblical, should also apply to monetary maaser. And so that becomes a huge debate in the commentaries as to whether that's true or not. So if you look...
A little bit confusing.
Welcome to the club.
that's my nature. If you go into Machane Yehuda...
Yeah.
And you see all these guys with the big signs, Mafresh, Tumos, and Maestros.
Yeah.
Now, are they Mafresh, Tumos, and Maestros from their... whoever they're doing it, or are they maaser from their profits?
So I assume, or at least I hope, that they're doing it from the produce, because otherwise we're all in a bit of a problem. I hope so.
Yeah,
but
that's, you know, they give it to the animals or burn it or whatever they do.
Yeah, they do different things with it. I hope so, at least. So if you look in source number 5, the Bach says, he disagrees. The Bach says, Ein za ela b'maser oni mizera ha'aretz shi mitzvah sase min ha'Torah. All of that discussion that of Shin Lamed Aleph is only for biblical agricultural ma'aser for a poor person. Avomasha Adam ma'aser mimasha marviach b'masa b'matan kiksafim u'shar revachim. But our practice of tithing monetary profits ain't no bichlal zeh, has nothing to do with this. V'yachal itein mimono litzdako lepidyon shvuyin, and you can do with that money whatever you want. Doesn't have to go to the poor person. Eino chayev ba lo min haTorah v'lo midrabbanan. The Bach goes to the opposite end of the extreme. He says, "What's the source for meiser from money? Nothing.
Nothing.
It's a practice that people do. It is a minhag,
but it's still a necessity."
Ah, so this gets into a whole discussion, which is, do I still have to do it anyway? Right? Are minhagim binding? Sure, they are. Why are minhagim binding? Minhagim are binding because of a neder. It's as if you took a vow. So if you hold that the giving of meiser is a custom, so what many mefarshim and many poskim say is that you should do it and say, bli neder, I'm doing this without taking a vow to do it year in and year out. Because let's say you're poor, you still have to keep your vows, unless you do hataras nedarim or something like that. So that's one way, that's one approach that people have, which is if you do it 3 times, that's like a minhag, and then it becomes binding, and you have to do it year in and year out. There are some, we'll see, though, that take it even further. There is a concept called a minhag of Klal Yisrael, meaning if the entire Jewish people accept something on themselves, or a community accepts something on itself, you can't opt out. If you belong to that community or you belong to the Jewish people, you can't opt out of it. So there are some, we'll see, that say that Meiser is actually, it's not biblical, it's not even rabbinic, but it is a custom that was universally accepted by all Jewish people, and therefore you can't do Hataras Nedarim. Now, well, at least for Ashkenazim, that's an example of that.
Why the arbitrary number of 10%? Why not make it like the IRS, 40%?
Right, so... so
that doesn't go to the poor people.
Very good. But I it's a good question. I think the answer is that we've modeled it, as we saw last week, going back to the Avos, we have traditions that they did that. Now, we don't do it because they did. We do it because at some point in history, we accepted it on ourselves, but we're modeling their behavior.
It's like eating turkey.
Yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, if someone had to gotten up and said 10%, who was the guy that got up and said, no, fuck it, 10%?
That I can't answer. I will say that the majority of post-Gim don't agree with that idea that it's a universal minhag. Meaning, if you look around, not everybody gives 10%. Some people give more, some people give less, and they're not wedded to the meiser idea. And so, I think the consensus of most poskim is that it is a personal decision. If you've given 10% for several years already, so then it is you essentially took it on yourselves. And if you want to stop doing that for whatever reason, you would have to do Hataras Nedarim. If you're just starting out with that practice, so what people recommend to do is to say, I'm doing this without making a neder, that I'm not taking a vow, I'm just doing this because I think it's a nice thing to do. Continuing in this line of thought, going back earlier, if you look in source number 6, this is the Maharam Meirutenberg. So the Maharam of Rutenberg was one of the greatest of the last Rishonim, one of the last Balei Tosfos in Germany. He died in prison, and he refused to allow himself to be redeemed. Mm-hmm. His student was the Rush, whose son wrote the Tur. So we assume that the Tur and the Shulchan Aruch are based off of, at least very strongly, his Psakim. And if you look what he says, he writes, Ma'os ma'aser yeroa acher shehechziku l'seitam la'aniyim. money that was set aside for Meiser, after it's been designated to be given to the aniyim, ein l'shanoson l'mitzvah acheres, you can't change it for some other purpose, denire kegozel aniyim, because it looks like you're stealing from the poor people. Now, keep in mind, he says, looks like. Not that you are, but he says, it looks like you're stealing. The optics are bad. De'afal pisha eino min ha-Torah, ela min hug. Even though it's not biblical and just a custom, ha-kaimalan dvarim ha-mutarim, va-achareihem noagim bohem iser, iata rashai lahatir bifneihem. We have this rule that when something is permitted, but some people take on themselves not to do something or a practice, you can't change that. It's like a neder. And so what he's saying is that this has no basis in halacha in terms of biblical or rabbinic. It is a custom, but this custom, at least in his community, was legally binding. I'll just give you a slightly more later application, which is also in Germany. Again, apparently this was the Meiser was a big thing in Germany. In the early modern period, so in the time of the Yavetz and the Chacham Tzvi and Rav Yonasan Eibeshitz, so that's like in the 1700s. So at that point, and the Chassam Sofer a little bit later, there was this practice that whenever a dowry was given, the parents would take maaser from it before giving it to the kids because they didn't trust the kids to give maaser on their own. They didn't think they would do it. They would say that I'm allowed to take maaser and give it to the poor people because I don't think you're going to do that. you don't trust your son-in-law. I don't know. That was the practice, and apparently that was the custom until pre-war Europe. And Rav Moshe, even in America, was asked shilas about giving maaser from a dowry. From this like Hasidish Rebbe, and Rav Moshe acknowledges this has been the practice in Ashkenaz in Eastern Europe for many, 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 many years, going back at least to the 1700s. His shaila was that this was in the 1960s, that this guy has a son-in-law who wants to learn in Kollel, and the father-in-law says, I'm going to give you $10,000 as a dowry, which in the 1960s was a significant sum of money. And he says, in addition to that, I'll support you for the time being. And, you know, this will accrue interest. The dowry will accrue interest in the bank. According to Rav Moshe, it was accruing 5% interest from a savings bank, which is pretty good. That's pretty good.
That was pretty good. In the time, the age of Rav Moshe, that's pretty standard.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That was pretty standard for regular savings?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. So,
in the 60s, 70s.
Yeah. Really? Now it's like for a standard savings bank, it's like 0.01%. If you do a high yield. No, if you use a high yield savings that's online, that's something else.
But
okay. Well, I'll talk to Powell.
Jewish guy, Ben Bernanke.
Okay. but there, it was actually the son-in-law wanted to use some of that meiser to support his family, his extended family, who wasn't doing too well. And the father-in-law said, no, I gave you this money to sit and learn. I didn't give it to you to give to your family to for a higher standard of living. So you kind of have the opposite of the German concern. But this discussion has relevance all the way up till now. Regardless, what we see over here is that the Bach and the Maharami Rutenberg really do seem to say that this is just purely a custom. If you turn the page, this is the Tshuva Me'ava, a Rav from the, I think he was a Talmud of the Noda Behuda, so probably also in the 1700s. So he asks, well, did the Maharami Rutenberg not see Tosfos? Now, again, he's a Baal Tosfos, so maybe he saw it, maybe he didn't. It doesn't seem that any of the Baalei Tosfos otherwise really saw or cared about it. So that's the question. And it could be that they did, and like Rav Schechter said, they just didn't care. Or they didn't see it. So the Tshuva Me'ava says, De'efshar gami ma'aram nelam divrei Tosfos hanal. Maybe he didn't have it. Kimo shagam kein nelmu min habach, just like the Bach didn't have that Tosfos, because otherwise, of course, the Bach wouldn't have said what he said, that it's a minog. De'efshar bo kol ha'achronim v'lo be'yurim Ve'inichu makom lehizgader bazeh. Maybe they just, didn't know what they were doing, didn't see it, and so they just tried to cover themselves. Ube'emes kevin shetosfos be'atzmam lo hetiku davar mimenu be'piskei hatosfos. But then he says, since from the fact that Tosfos didn't record it in the Piskei Tosfos, v'gam harosh be'psakov lo hetik davar lipsak halach, and the Rush didn't paskin this way, and the Marami Rutenberg didn't, maybe it's just a homily and we don't really care about it. Maybe for another reason they just didn't like it. Tosfos just thought it was a nice pshat in the Gemara that he wanted to bring. And he didn't think that that was the halacha. And the Bach holds like the Rush and the Marami Rutenberg. V'savarle bevadai eino lo midoraisa v'lo bidrabanon. It's not a doraisa or drabanon. Ki im minhag shenagu b'nei gola. So that term, it is a custom that was accepted by the entire diaspora. So the Tshuva Me'ava holds that you have to do it. But you have to do it because it is a universal minhag. And as I said before, most people don't paskin that way. And just empirically, if you look around, not everybody keeps Meisner, and they're not all sinning. It's just that it wasn't universal. In a particular community, it was. And what's the biggest raya, what's the biggest proof that it wasn't a universal minhag? Because the Shulchan Aruch itself paskins, poor people can give less and still fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah. You have to give just a shlishis hashekel. So from the fact that we have a floor that's lower than a tenth, obviously, it's not something that all of Klal Yisrael accepted on themselves. And the Aruch HaShulchan, he lived in the 1800s, he flips it around and says, you want to know the biggest proof that it's just purely a custom? You want to know why it's a proof that it's not biblical or it's not something that's universal per se? It's because ideally, what are you supposed to do? You're supposed to give everything to fulfill the need of the person. It's just that Chazal came in and affixed limits. So if it's a real mitzvah to give a tenth, then what's the mitzvah to fulfill the need? It seems to be something completely different. And so the Aruch HaShulchan says, nope, it is a rabbinic mitzvah. The Aruch HaShulchan actually takes a middle-of-the-road approach. He says it's not biblical and it's not a custom, but rather it is a rabbinic mitzvah. And that is the approach of a few people. It is the approach of the Aruch HaShulchan, as well as a few others, that it's a rabbinic mitzvah. If you look in source number 10, so the Taz says, Nira, diyesh ledamos ma'aser shemafrishin min harevach mimenu. We can compare the halachos of Ma'aser to this ma'aser ksofim of giving a tenth of your money, ledin ma'aser ani shel tvura upeiros, to the agricultural mitzvah of giving Ma'aser. Umori v'chami, and my father-in-law, the Bach, kosav, sheha ma'aser shel mamon shelonu ein bo chiyav lo min ha-Torah v'lo midrabanan. So he says, I disagree with my father-in-law. He says that our Gemara says that it is an absolute chiyuv, an absolute obligation. I don't know what that phrase means. Who are all of the poskim that say that it's a chiyuv gamur to give? I mean, it's not a chiyuv gamur. What did the language of the Shulchan Aruch say? It's a mida beinonis. It's the intermediary level. And if you give less than that, it means you're a stingy person. It doesn't mean it's an obligation. So the Taz is a very strange language. He just seems to say from the fact that that's the middle shear, that makes it an obligation. And then the Beis Yosef in the name of the Yerushalmi. What Yerushalmi is he talking about? We went through the Yerushalmi. It doesn't say that. The Yerushalmi says, what's the maximum? What's the minimum? It says, Kabed es Hashem mehoncha, honor Hashem from your hon, which we translate to mean meiser, but we sort of double it to be 20%. That's the maximum. The Bach, the Taz, had a totally different reading of the Yerushalmi and says, no, Kaved es Hashem mehoncha is a reference to giving a tenth, and that is an obligation which the Beis Yosef quotes. The Beis Yosef doesn't really say that, but that's where he's coming from. So if we stop here, what that means is we have a three-way machlokas. The three-way machlokas is it d'oraisa, according to the Tashbetz Katan and maybe Tosfos, maybe according to this Medrash in the Sifrei that may exist. Maybe it is rabbinic, like the Aruch HaShulchan and some others say. The third option has two possibilities, that it is a custom, and the question is, what is that custom? Is it the custom that all of Klal Yisrael accepts it on ourselves, or is it just an individual practice that's pretty commonplace? And the consensus of the poskim is that, as I said, it is a custom, it is purely a minhag, and it's based on individuals. There are, however, a couple of other interesting takes on this, which I want to look at source number 12 with you. Source number 12, this is the Minchas Yitzchak. The Minchas Yitzchak was two chief rabbis ago of the Eid HaRedis in Yerushalayim. He was a big, big posek. Originally, he was a posek for the European community, I think in Antwerp. And it says, Atanirasi bedavar chadash. I saw something new. Shechidesh bazeh b'shailas hachuvas mishpat tzedek, who was, I think, a 19th century rav in Europe. De'ikar meiser ksafim be'eretz Yisrael netakna. That the primary institution of giving meiser on your money was for in Israel. De'lo adifa ho'asmachta migufe dekra. Because if you hold that it's an asmachta, or it's built off of the pasuk, either biblically or rabbinically, it can't be greater than the pasuk itself, than what's written in the Torah. Now, what is the Torah talking about? Something in the land of Israel. So the Mishpat Tzedek says, Meiser on your money is also only in Israel. Dekra de Meiser Ksafim is Rabbe Meribuye de Kol Tvulas Arecha. That's where we learn it from Meiser on agriculture. Im Kain, ki hechi de tfuas arecha chi of Eretz Yisrael, hu adin Meiser Ksafim. So just like it's an obligation in Israel, so too, that's where your obligation is to give Meiser on your money.
Now, I have Israelis that I would be very happy with
it. Well, because now it's not even biblical to give Meiser. Yeah. And then he says, va'al pizeh, and based off of this, Efshar dekol hakulo shekasvu aposkim yesh makom lomar de'eretz Yisrael lechumra azlinan. So we do have, as we'll learn, there are many kulas that we have for Meiser. When it comes to the practice of giving Meiser, you don't have to be so exacting. You don't have to calculate everything. If you're on hard times for a year, maybe you don't even have to do Hataras Nadarim because maybe you didn't accept it on yourself to give when you're poor. We have a lot of kulas involved with Meiser. So the Mishpat Tzedek says, maybe that's only in Chutz La'aretz because we don't really have to give it there anyway so much. So maybe it's, but in Eretz Yisrael, we take this very seriously. So that's a very interesting idea. Ukechidish hanal nimtza b'sefer anitfas mechadash. I found this also in this other sefer. Ulechora v'zel shono. And this is his language. Ulechora amarti. It seems for me to say, Hoel dechlal hakosov b'maser zarecha, since it includes it in the meiser of produce, u'meiser ksafim b'hadade, alongside the halachos to give a tenth of your money, imkein ein noeg b'chutz la'aretz, it doesn't apply outside of Israel, rak b'eretz Yisrael shenoeg meiser tzvua, only in Israel where we have agricultural meiser, amrinan didavka b'makom sh'ata nosein meiser karka, ata nosein meiser ksafim. So, when you give Meiser on your produce, you give Meiser on your money. V'im kein be'eretz Yisrael, Meiser ksafim de'oraisa. And so he goes further and says, so therefore, in Israel, giving Meiser on your money is biblical. Avol b'chutz la'aretz hu midrabanan. In chutz la'aretz, maybe it's only rabbinic. So that's his. That's a very unique approach, which is unique. Suffice it to say that most people don't hold that. And in fact, the Aruch HaShulchan, he also holds it to Rabbanan, as you remember. The Aruch HaShulchan has a whole different idea about the history of Meiser Ksafim. He says that Meiser Ksafim and all of these limits in Staka only happened after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, after Jews were sort of kicked out and not able to work the land. Why? Because then Meiser couldn't, agricultural Meister couldn't support the poor people anymore. If, you know, 80% of the Jewish people, when the Beis HaMikdash was around and we had our own autonomy or in living in the land of Israel as farmers, so okay, so if 10% of the population didn't work on farms, so the poor people could still make a living based off of the Meister from the farmers. Nowadays, though, that system is just not tenable. Nobody owns land anymore, or most people don't. So therefore, it was Dafka after the Jewish people were kicked out of Israel that Chazal began instituting, hey, you got to give Meiser. You got to give Meiser on your money. So the Aruch HaShulchan very much disagrees with this idea. Again, some people agree, some people disagree. And then he continues and says, Ulam, B'yad Shol, in the Sefer Yad Shol, Kasav, D'lochein Tiknu Meiser Ksafim, Kevin Shebechutz Laretz, Eino Noeg. Meiser tvua tiknu meiser ksafim shenoeg af bechutz laaretz umashma deikert hatakana haisa litzorich chutz laaretz. So the Yad Shul says something similar to the Aruch HaShulchan, that it was specifically instituted for people outside the land of Israel. But the Minchas Yitzchak seems to say that you don't even have to say it was post Chorban. You know, we know during Bayis Sheni, during the Second Temple, that there were Jews living outside the land of Israel even when the Beis Hamikdash was around, and so they still got a pass. And so what were we saying? Either for the Jewish communities there, if you're not farmers, even if you are farmers, you don't have to give Meiser. So how are the poor people in Chutz Laretz going to live? So we have to have Meiser on other, on business ventures. Or even if that community is wealthy, we don't want to give people a pass. You got to bring in a tenth of your money to Tzedakah in Israel or something like that. So it's specifically designed for people not to find a loophole in the system. That's basically the standard rabbinic approach as to why did the sages institute, why did they institute Meiser? Well, they instituted it because we don't want you to find a loophole from agricultural Meiser. So if you follow that thought, that it was essentially modeled after Meiser, so then maybe some of the halachas apply to tzedakah from Meiser, even if it's not biblical. Even if it's rabbinic, if you hold that it's modeled after Meiser, so then maybe we should. But if you hold, like most people do, that it's a custom, so we could have the custom for a myriad of reasons. We could do it, why? Because it's a nice thing to do. Because Yaakov did it, because Yitzchak did it, because Avram did it. It has nothing to do with the Meiser in the Torah. That's just something else. So then the halachos of agricultural Meiser have absolutely no bearing on the custom to give Meiser from your money. So hopefully what we'll learn about next week is how do we paskin? As I said, we hold that it's a custom.
We'll play hokey next week.
But yeah, so we'll see how the Shulchan Aruch holds. And also we'll see. There's a major discussion in the poskim. What can you use Meiser for? Can you use it for mitzvos? Can you use it for optional mitzvos?
Reminds me of a funny thing.
What?
Because somebody I remember downtown went to Moshe Feinstein.
Yeah.
That he was paying tuition for something to
yeshiva. Yeah.
And he didn't have enough money for everything. So he told him to count that money toward that.
Yeah, that's one of the things we'll talk about. Can you use Meiser for yeshiva tuition? Or spoiler alert: when it came to shul membership for the young professionals, Rabbi Zirkin said they could use Meiser money for it because many of them are a little bit short on liquidity. And so the question is: can you use it for shuls? There's a shadchan who you have to pay for her to work for you, and she says you can give Meiser for that. I like, well, why can you give Meiser to a shadchan? Maybe she's very wealthy from this business. Why can you give Meiser to her? So we'll see. We'll talk about what you can use it for. Or a moel, yeah. Can you? So that's an even more interesting case because you're obligated to do that mitzvah. You're not obligated to hire a shadchan, but you are obligated. You are obligated to either do the bris milah yourself or to hire a moel.
Right.
So yeah, we'll talk about if you could do that too.
Obvious answer to all of this.
Okay.
Which is fundamental in economics.
Yeah.
It's called a tax rate. As long as you have governments who clearly there's, you know, it's a religious government or a secular government, it doesn't make any difference. if they are saying 10%, it's a tax rate.
Right.
So why then, have, if, let's be in Israel for a minute, okay? Why then, the government in Israel ordains a tax rate?
Yeah.
Well, how can you be taxed a second time by giving Misa?
Ah, okay. So you're working under the assumption that Miser is a tax rate, and you can't be double taxed. Well, I mean,
exactly.
What about New York? I mean,
clearly a tax rate.
So you're right that it's a tax, but you can pay multiple taxes. You have state, federal, county.
That's actual Miser.
Ah, so we'll talk about what can you deduct, what's tax exempt, what's Miser exempt expenditures. And we'll talk about that, you know, business losses or other obligations that you have. Can you pay Miser post-tax, or does it have to be pre-tax nowadays? So we'll talk about that. So in some ways you're right that you can't be, that it's, you don't get it double, but sometimes maybe you can. We'll see.
Well, if I'm the U.S. government, then
well, they just take you don't even need to write them a check. You just give them the bank account. But.
Oh, he's giving it all away now.